B3. Number 5A.
We begin with point 12 and with the title, The Suppositional Origin of Evil. And we were seeing that asking constantly about the origin of error is just asking a wrong question. So what is the solution? Well, Mrs. Eddy says that mortal mind is a solecism in language. So she took, so to say, the origin of mortal mind away from an objective cause and put it right back into misunderstanding within ourselves, and says it is a solecism, it's a wrong use of the term divine mind. For her, the only origin of being is the divine mind, and whenever we misuse that term, when we don't give to that term the right value, then we misuse that word, and that's a solecism in language. Can you see what she does? She translates, so to say, the question of evil from the objective world into the subjective world. And by doing that, naturally, she has a chance of showing where the origin of evil lies, namely in our false conception. So that the origin of evil is within us, so to say, but that is no more an origin, but just a misinterpretation of the divine mind. There again, you could ask, where does that misinterpretation come from? And you start all over again in the human, with the human concept. So what Mrs. Eddy really does then is to show that if, in spite of the human mind, we go out from the divine mind and demonstrate the divine mind, that then we do no more ask the question. That's her answer. Her answer is that the question is anyway a question of the human mind. The human mind per se is always dualistic. We cannot have a human mind that is monistic. That would be a false definition of the human mind. The human mind can only think in twos, in opposites. So when she wants to solve that question, she more or less says, look here, you have to go out from the divine mind and demonstrate in your own life that divine mind, and the more you do that, the closer you come to that divine mind which does no more ask that question, which no more asks a dualistic question. In other words, her answer is that she says, I cannot reason away through human reason the origin of mortal mind. I cannot reason it away, but you can demonstrate it away. Therefore, those who demonstrate the one mind, they are no more asking that question. That's her answer. She says, our various theories will never lose their imaginary power of good and evil until what? Until we lose our faith in them and make life its own proof of harmony and God. This is quite a good quote that pinpoints really her answer. So, can you see what she wants to indicate? There is no way of reasoning away duality as long as we use the human mind. because the human mind, by definition, is dualistic. So if we use the human mind that is dualistic and ask that that dualism gives us an answer for monism, we ask an unscientific question. So the answer is, if the human mind is dualistic, then try as close as you can to come to the divine mind and work out from the divine mind, and as you demonstrate the divine mind, you are no more asking the question of evil. That's our answer. That's why we see the answer always in the method of going out from the synonymous terms that are monistic, spiritually monistic, that we go out from the synonymous term, never leave the synonymous terms, always stay with the synonymous terms, and see that everything turns within the rhythm of the synonymous term. There is no opposite. There is no outside. So the question of duality is not asked, and therefore does not need to be answered. We see again something very important, that really Christian Science is not something that we can fathom alone with reasoning out things, but that it is a question of life and therefore of demonstration. We can come to the next point, 13, and can perhaps ask ourselves, what is the suppositional evolution of evil? What is the suppositional evolution of evil? We have seen before that, she said, all phenomena of evil must be reduced to the one noumenon of evil, really, to mortal mind. After all, the synonymous terms, the seven synonymous terms, all have their counterfeit, and so we could see that there are seven counterfeits of evil. But there again we see that those seven synonymous terms really are not seven gods, but is one god. And in the same way, we can see that all the counterfeits of the seven synonymous terms are actually all facets of mortal mind. In other words, mortal mind is, so to say, the cause of every evil, that everything evolves from evil. And you can see that very nicely when you analyze in the textbook those counterfeits, those seven counterfeits, and ask, how do they come into existence? How do they come at all into mortal existence? And you can trace them all back to mortal mind. Let's see how. So, in a way, we take the inverted word order. Instead of seeing that the word order starts with mind and then evolves through spirit and soul to the point of principle, which demonstrates itself as life, truth, and love, we can see the very opposite too, namely that once we start with mortal mind, then we have the whole gamut of error evolving from that. Why? What is the theory that Mrs. Eddy gives? She says, at the beginning, or at the basis of all evil, is mortal mind. Mortal mind is the cause of all discord. That it is the remote and predisposing cause of all suffering, the cause of all disease. So here you have these statements that at the cause of all evil is actually mortal mind. All right. What about the counterfeit of spirit, matter? What is matter? Is matter something, again, that is some kind of original evil? Or is it already an evolved state of mortal mind? Yes. She says matter is really the primitive belief of mortal mind. See, she reduces matter to the belief of mortal mind and says matter is the subjective state of mortal mind. So whenever we entertain mortal mind, what it brings forth as an object, as the object of contemplation, is actually matter. Matter is the subjective state of mortal mind. It says it's the subjective condition of mortal mind. She also sees that matter and material laws are the objective states of mortal mind. Whenever mortal mind consolidates itself as a universal belief, it takes on a so-called independent existence or an objective existence and calls itself matter. So here we have already the connection, mortal mind evolving through the subjective belief of mortal mind into an objective state of mortal mind. Then, when you have mortal mind, matter, you come to a third, the counterfeit of soul. You have the counterfeit of soul as material sense, material sensation, with all its suffering and pleasure and pains and so on. Fundamentally, it is material sense, material sensation. But what is material sensation? Is that again something per se? Or is it already a compound or an evolved state? And she says, I don't know how many times, dozens and dozens of times, she says, it is nothing else but mind in matter. So if you have mortal mind and its subjective state, matter, and you combine it and believe that mind is in that matter, you give to matter sensation. Because matter that has mind within itself has sensation. Matter that has no mortal mind in itself, like a stone, has no sensation. But that matter which believes that it has mind within itself has sensation, like our body. Take away from the body mortal mind, just when we are dead, and the body has no more sensation. So apparently that which gives to matter sensation is mortal mind inherent in body. Therefore, always when we believe that mortal mind is in body, we have all the pain we like, or we have all the pleasure we like. One way and the other works just as well. But can you see that material sense is not something per se? And actually, for practice, this is super important to see, that if you have suffering and physical suffering, that you don't feel, well, soul is the fact about material sense and about suffering, but if you don't see soul as that which is mind and spirit, then we are not touching really the core of suffering, namely the belief that we believe there is mind in matter. So we can again reduce suffering, material sense, sensation, we can reduce back to matter and mortal mind and see that these material belief, material sensation is actually only mortal mind. Is that clear? See, that's what Mrs. Eddy says. I'm not making up things. I can quote them, you see, that she says, mind, small m, sees and feels through matter. So you have seeing and feeling, the physical senses, it is matter and mind. Mind sees and feels how? Through the channel of matter. So you have mind, matter, putting mind into matter, you have sensation. Isn't that terrific? Just one great build-up of mortal mind. And there is actually not much in the whole story of evil except mortal mind, and that is a solecism that is just saying, why have you misunderstood divine mind? Why don't you go back to the divine mind and see that that mind is the only spirit and therefore the only testimony that you should believe. So, all right, we come to the next counterfeit of principle. Counterfeit of principle is beliefs, human beliefs. Matter doesn't believe. The five physical senses don't believe. The only thing that can believe is the human mind. Therefore, it's the human mind that formulates its own beliefs. Beliefs are man-made. We have made them. And we shouldn't blame these beliefs that they operate. We made them. We are the creator of it. We are to be blamed. And we have to correct it. She says that beliefs proceed from so-called material senses. Can you see? Out of material senses proceed human material beliefs. We take, so to say, the testimony of the physical senses in, and in the mystical age we make some legends around about it, and we build up some myths around about it, and in the scientific era we began to formulate some beliefs, some theories around about it, and then we enthroned these theories. We did it. We do the very same thing with science, what the Israelites of old did really with their idols. They did the same thing. Isaiah tells it so nicely over pages and pages. He says, look here, you people, how silly you are. You go and take an axe and go out into the woods and you take one nice tree and you cut the tree down, and when the tree is cut down, you can cut off the branches and burn it, but the stem you may take, and then you take that stem, you say the trunk, and you carve out the figure, an idol, and the moment you have finished that whole thing, you put it up at home, and then you fall down and worship it. From that point on, it's your God. And he wanted to show them that they are actually producing their gods, and then afterwards, when they have produced them, when they were the creator of their idols, then at one point when it was finished, then the whole thing was turned upside down, and then the idols were ruling over them, and they began to worship it. And the same thing we do with beliefs. Somehow, somewhere, through some incidents, mankind has always brought into its society new beliefs, new human beliefs, from superstition onward to human beliefs, to theoretical theories, and so on. And once it has been established, they worship it. Now think of all those theories that, for instance, medicine has built up over the last few centuries. And little by little they had to discard it. But for a while they worshipped it. And so it is with so many human theories. These human beliefs are man-made, and they usually are created through some kind of sense testimonies, from some kind of experience we have in our life, and take in the sense testimony and formulate that sense testimony into laws, into relationships, and we build up relationships which may not be there at all. That's then called superstition. So belief, she says, is knowledge gained from the so-called material senses. Can you see now? The rhythm. Mortal mind, the objective state, matter that objectifies itself. When it's objectified, mortal mind says, this and matter is one, and you have mind in matter, which is sensation. Then out of that sensation you begin to formulate myths and legends and beliefs and superstition and all these things. And you build up a whole system of beliefs. Think of all the system of moral beliefs we have built up. all the religious beliefs we have been building up in every religion, and they all are more or less confronting each other. The morals in our country are not the morals in Siam, and the morals in Siam are not the morals in Russia. The morals in Russia are not the morals in Colombia. According to the nation, to the culture, a whole set of beliefs are built up, and woe to him who does not obey these beliefs, not thinking anymore that they were man-made. What is death? The opposite of life. There you see it very clearly again, what death is. He says, eating from the fruits of belief came the condemnation, thou shalt surely die. Meaning, if you obey instead of principle, if you obey those man-made beliefs, naturally they do not have real life in them. We live, so to say, the beliefs, and these beliefs just die out. And so thou shalt surely die. And again we can see that death is actually nothing else but another kind of belief. Why should death be a fact when death has never been testified? No one has ever testified that there is death. We only have testified that the body has no more mortal mind in itself. That's all what we testify. That at a certain point, the body does no more show forth the reactions of mortal mind. That's all what we can testify from the human standpoint. But we cannot testify that death is a reality. Not at all. We have never asked somebody who died if he is dead or not. We have no indication. Actually, today, where now the science of death comes into is of great interest. It's about a couple of years. More and more universities devote themselves to the research of death, or of immortality, actually, because they begin to see that they always get more and more indications and symptoms that actually there is no death. They have actually more proofs that there is no death than they have proof that there is death. And this, when once this idea, you know, is awakened in human thought, they will go at it and they will find out quite a lot of things about it. Up to now, this question was taboo. You say taboo? Yeah, was taboo. If somebody did no more breathe, he was dead, finished. If the heart didn't beat anymore, dead. Well, if a heart, a material organ, does no more move according to mortal mind, we call that death. We give to it a completely new identity, and we believe that exists, but it's no proof that it exists. And I think it becomes more and more natural, really, that Jesus actually came here and in order to disprove that belief and give, so to say, a visible proof, a physically sensed, tangible proof that there is no death. And naturally now it has taken 2,000 years to wake up to the fact that this may be so, that this may not just be a nice story, or that that may not only be just a miracle, one of the many miracles, but that he came really as his main object to prove to mankind at the beginning of the 5,000-year period that there is no death. Meaning what? Meaning when mortal mind, which is nothing, leaves the manifestation of being an inhabitant of a mortal material body, that this does not mean death of man. That this is just a phenomena of mortal mind and of body, but not of death, not of life. Here we see that Mrs. Eddy couples death as an outcome of believing in beliefs. Positively, Mrs. Eddy also gives the line of reasoning which says, only when we live life, when we live principle, that alone is life. So living the divine principle is life. But living the divine principle has nothing to do neither with body, nor with mortal mind, nor with matter, nor with sense testimony. Life is something completely different. It is independent on mortal mind, independent on body. Therefore, there is no proof that what is called death is death of life, the end of life. We try to prove something and actually prove it in a completely wrong field, namely in the mortal material field. We don't prove it in the right field, in the field of principle being eternal. So when one sees that, one really loses any fear really of death, any kind that death is something actual. When one sees that death is nothing else but that mortal mind says one nice day, now I'm no more going to be active in that mortal body. All right, so what? So what? What's that? We don't mind. We are not trying to live mortal mind. We are not trying to eternalize the body. So what? And we turn to a completely different frame of reference where we see that life is life. It's actually the outcome of principle and not the outcome of human belief. Therefore, in the measure as we live the divine principle lives life.